All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful, finally can say beautiful, Saturday, May 14th, 2016. Pleased to be joined in studio by my friend Steve Goldman, who's been with us for a couple weeks now. We've been discussing some golf-related things and some in terms of fitting and some tournament play. So, Steve, pleasure to have you back.
Anthony, it's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Hopefully, we had some technical difficulties in terms of the audio, so we weren't able to put up the podcast. So we'll probably retalk a little bit about, you know, touch base about some of the things we mentioned last week, because I know some folks were really interested in hearing about that. So we'll be getting to that shortly. But we got a couple of things to take care of. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Players Club. We've got an angry Jordan Spieth, and. And we've got and some more fitting stuff to get to, but we're going to take a short break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org. Is your inspection due? Are you tired of listening to that noise your car is making? If you're looking for a reliable shop to service your car, try A1 Action Auto for all your car service needs. A1 Auto is a New York State certified shop, and owner Ed Terabile has over 25 years of experience. A1 Action Auto is conveniently located off Sunrise Highway in West Islip, so pick up the phone and call A1 Action Auto at 631-321-4242. That's 631-321-4242.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to have in studio Steve Goldman. Steve, let's start with the players. A little bit of everything yesterday.
We
had, you know, through a couple of days, we had, we had a tied tournament record. We had our first ace in 14 years since the ponytail, the mechanic, Angel Cabrera.
The most interesting
the
man
most,
in
most interesting man. Yeah, Angel Cabrera is not the most interesting man in the world. The man who can – Angel Cabrera is the guy who pretends he doesn't know any English, but I know he knows English, and so he kind of just kind of plays it, and he kind of nods along, but he always has an interpreter with him, but just in case. But,
right.
But the mechanic is he was the last one 14 years ago. We've had usually the average score for the PGA for the Players Championship is about 1400, I think, through the years. So, and they're already at 10 under. So birdies galore.
Yeah. We've had 263s already.
Two 63s tying. Yep.
And I think both of them. Well, I know Colt Knost bogeyed his last hole. He could have easily shot 62 yesterday.
Easily. So we have that. We had an angry Jordan Spieth. He was angry like an old man returning soup at a deli. just a little bit of everything. Just a little bit of everything. It's been quite the for the tournament that so desperately wants to be the fifth major.
Hey, I think it is. I mean, look, obviously it's not anyone's opinion because, you know, the record books are the record books.
Right.
But you have to explain to me, not you personally, or mm-hmm. maybe you do, I don't know. You'll have to explain to me why we can't consider this tournament to be the same as another major. Is it the best field? Is it the best field in the season?
Check.
Right?
Yep. It ticks all the – I mean, you could say –
Is the golf course respectable?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you have 144 players in the field, so it's certainly a full field event. I mean, look, I'm not gonna denigrate the Masters. The Masters stands on its own, but
not the strongest field.
It's not the strongest field. It's not a big field either. You might have 90, 95 people in there.
Right. Nor was it ever designed to be the strongest field.
Which is fine
on itself. That's not the point.
That, and like I said, Augusta National is Augusta National. It stands on its own. It's you know, that's one of the, you know, if you mention mention golf courses, especially in the United States, and you say name five golf courses in the United States, I mean, how would you not say Augusta National is one of the five, you know, one of the five best golf courses in the United States? But, you know, why, you know, obviously what the Players Championship doesn't have going forward is it's well, new as compared to everything else. So people don't like change. People don't like to say, well, we have four majors and that's good enough and that's the Grand Slam. But when they made the move, because the Players' Championship used to be in March. They used to have the Players' Championship before the Masters.
Yeah.
And they made the brilliant move to say, look, we have a major in April. We have a major in June, July, and August. So mm-hmm. it's, you know, you've got U.S. Open, British Open, PGA Championship. It almost seems like they're just on top of each other. Mm-hmm. So let's move the Players' Championship to May. So now you've got one in April. You've got one in May. You've got June, July, and August. So why can't you have... why can't you have five majors? Why can't you have one major each month?
Right. I think I get both sides of it. I guess one could argue, because I'm not sure I disagree with you. I guess one could just argue is that why do we need a fifth major?
Yeah.
Why does it have? Why? I mean, you know, in this world of where it seems to be a lot of people get what they want. We live in a world where, you know, why can't we just live with the history? Why can't we just accept what the history is?
Sure.
I think, you know, there are business decisions driving why they want it to be the fifth major. And I think, as opposed to wanting to rewrite history, I just think it's kind of interesting. I actually think it's kind of funny because it just kind of wants to build itself. It almost, in some sense, they do everything like a fifth major. I mean, let's just face it. I mean, it ticks all the boxes.
It's on TV all the time. You basically get first ball to last ball coverage, pretty much every day of the tournament, which you don't get pretty much anywhere else.
Right. No, I would say I think you're absolutely. It ticks all the boxes. Yeah. You're right. It has the coverage. The media. Timmy Fincham has always, you know, pumped it up as such. The media has always, tried to treat it as such. I mean, I think this, whenever they really bring it up, I really think that's the sort of argument, whether it is a fifth major or not.
And look at who's won. I mean, you basically have a roster of some of the all-time greats and some of the people you've never heard of and never heard of since. I mean, for every Craig Perks and Stephen Ames, you've got Greg Norman, Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and Phil Mickelson winning this thing. So
absolutely. And I think... And it begs the question, then why do we need a tour championship at the end of the year? Like, then what is that? You know, what does that become?
Well,
you know, what I mean? Like, is that even?
Well, you know, it's the PGA Tour took their cue from NASCAR and said, you know, you have to have some sort of an end to a season. You have to have a playoffs. You have to have this culmination at the end of, you know, the 30 greatest golfers playing one tournament for $10 million.
Right.
Because of course, if they only played for, you know, 1.4 million like every other tournament, then the players would say, you know,
unacceptable.
Why would I care? I mean, I've played 25 tournaments this year. Why do I need to play three more in 4 weeks? That's not in my schedule. But then they said, well, what if we pay you $10 million if you win it? Say, well, okay, you know, maybe playing three out of 4 weeks isn't such a bad idea after all.
Yeah, right. I think, but getting back to your point, like I get why the argument for it. I just think, you know, especially when you compare it to like the LPGA, who swaps out majors like it's right. And to that point, listen, comparing the LPGA to the PGA Tour is apple. It's not even apples to apples.
Right.
I mean, apples to oranges. It's not even in the same, you know, category. So they've had a history of bringing in tournaments, and I guess you could say really, the Avion Championship was really what the PGA, what the Players Championship was, because the Avion Championship was awesome. I mean, in terms of the the player experience. It was more money. It was professional. I mean, it did everything it was except be a major, except they were able to be a major.
Right.
So like the player, to your point, like the Players Championship, they do everything as if it were a major. It has the strongest field. It has the TV coverage. It has the billing. It has everything.
The golf course.
It has the past champions are major champion, you know, notables. It's not... you know, like you said, it's not, well, it's certainly not the, you know, one of the, a lower tier. It's not a wraparound schedule tournament.
No.
You know, it's not the fries.com.
Right.
You know, John Deere. You know, it's not anything like that. No, no disrespect to those tournaments, but this is, without question, the strongest field in golf.
Absolutely. I mean, and again, you know, look at the PGA Championship. 25 of the 156 spots are club professionals. Now, again, no offense to club professionals.
No.
It's great for them. You know, it's basically, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, but you're basically looking at, you know, 25 players, maybe one or two are lucky to make the cut, and the rest of them, you know, they play their two rounds, they slam their trunks, they go home, and they talk about how great the experience is.
Sure.
U.S. Open. U.S. Open, you know, I mean, look.
Open for a reason.
U.S. Open is, you know, for me, that is calendar circling event.
Right.
That is, don't talk to me during the third week in June. I don't want to know you because every Thursday, Friday, I'm in front of the TV watching the first two rounds. Saturday, especially the, when they were playing West Coast events and they made the decision a few years ago to go to prime time.
Awesome.
It was the best. It was the best thing that they could have ever done because you can go until 10 o'clock Saturday night. You can go to you know 8:30, 9 o'clock Sunday night.
Yep.
And it was great, and it was great theater. But still, yes, open for a reason. It's you know, to quote Tim Cup, it's the most democratic golf tournament that there is. Anybody with a handicap of 1.2 or 1.4 or better can qualify. But then look, how many, let's just say, local qualifiers even make the cut? Forget about even being in contention. I mean, how many Michael Campbells are there going to be out there? How many Steve Jones are going to be out there winning the U.S. Open? So from that standpoint, I mean, look, and we revere these golf tournaments. You know, we put these on a different level than the other ones. But then you look at the Players' Championship and you say, well, why not? I said, they don't. I said, there's no amateurs that play. There are no club professionals. I said, everybody who's there deserves to be there. Everybody wants to be there. Like you said, it is the strongest field by far out of any tournament that they play. To me, the golf course has certainly earned its respect among the tour stops.
You think that the Island Green and that, as being argued as being gimmicky and whatnot, do you think that that has, you know, maybe hurt its cause in terms of being such a questionable, you know, being an Island Green, being that it's at the end of the you know, the 17th hole, being that it's a, it has played such a obviously pivotal role, critical role in turning out championships. Do you think that's hurt its cause in terms of being a major because it's considered gimmicky having an Island Green?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the reason, but to me, it's certainly the reason that it gets people to watch, especially late on a Sunday, because, you know, even look at 16. I mean, 16 is a nice par 5, but basically it's protected on one complete side by water. So it's not as if, well, can they really go for the green? Well, maybe they can go for the green. It's a great risk reward. I mean, 18, to me, 18 is one of the hardest finishing holes in all of golf. So the fact that you've got this, you know, nothing, I mean, it's baffling. It's baffling sometimes to see people. Like yesterday, I saw a golfer, I don't remember who it was, but he landed his ball 20 yards short in the water. And I'm thinking, this is like a pitching wedge sand wedge hole, and he's coming up 20 yards short. Yeah, is it gimmicky? Well, sure it is, because it's because there is nothing else like it out there.
Right.
But to me, it just adds to the character of the golf course, because it's not, to me, it doesn't, I mean, look, I mean, who am I to say? But it's not,
I know what you're saying.
It's not that difficult of a shot. You know, obviously, you got to bring in some factors. The pressure of being maybe the 71st hole in the championship. The wind, obviously, is a big factor, because there's nothing to protect the golfer or the hole itself. And the green, as big as it is, there really aren't a lot of places where you can land the ball safely and get out of there with, at worst, a par. Because there's so many ridges, there are so many undulations, that if you're on the wrong half of the hole, I mean, you're probably gonna three putt and you're gonna walk away with a four.
Well, let's just put it this way, and we gotta get to a break, but we'll just leave it like this. If there was grass around it, the green would be a joke. The hole would be a joke.
Absolutely.
So you know, it goes to show you that the moment makes that hole. The situation, the timing of the round, the wind, the pressure, the environment, the crowd,
right.
All of that, it makes that
it's,
whole.
It's such great theater.
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, when they're walking down 16, the golfers can't help but turn their heads to the right and say, what are those guys doing on 17? You know, what's it look like? The fact that it's such a long walk to get from 16 green to 17 tee. So it starts to go through their mind. Okay, what am I going to hit? What's the wind doing? You know, what's the situation? You know, where do I want to put the ball? You know, their brains are constantly going a million miles an hour.
Right.
From the moment they step off of 16 until they hit 17.
I wonder how many of the players really like that golf course. The one thing I will say about that golf course is it looks very manufactured. It doesn't.
Yes.
It's not a natural golf course. I'm not sure. It might be, you know, a decent test of golf in terms of, you know, if you have a minus 14 on average score, that means there's plenty of birdies to match the bogeys or whatnot, or really to make up for whatever's happening at 17, really.
Right.
certainly not one of my favorite courses in terms of the course itself, you know, and I'm not comparing it to, the old course or Augusta or, you know, or Oakmont or whatever. I'm just saying in general, right. Not my cup of tea. If I was going to build my own golf course, it wouldn't look like that. That's for sure. But like you said, it's a spectator. It's great theater. It's built to be great theater. That's why the mounds, and that's why Pete Dye did it and stuff. But we got to get to our first break, and we got plenty to talk about.
Speaking of Pete's golf.
Pete's golf, exactly. We got to get to that. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Last week, Steve and I were talking about Pete's Golf, and we were mentioning the experience that Steve had, and unfortunately, we didn't have some of that audio from last week, so we're going to just go through a little bit of what we discussed last week, and then we'll get to the newest stuff, what we wanted to, his experience in terms of what to look for when he was getting his driver, and then the eye-opening experience of when he got on the SAM lab for the putting and realized that his putter was like bent 90 degrees the wrong way. How he didn't recognize it, that's another story, but he would have been disqualified from many a tournaments. Let's just put it that way.
Well, I can tell you it was not bent out of anger. I mean, I'm not that obsessed about my game, or I'm not good enough to be that angry with myself. Let's just put it that way.
But at least you're sensible to know that you're not good enough to that angry. When amateur golfers out there, I still get a kick out of when I'm out in a golf tournament and they're like, you know, people get angry, and then you say, how often do you play? And
right.
I'm like, what? Yeah.
Or how good are you? They're like, what do you usually shoot? I'm like, well, then what are you upset about?
Right, exactly. This is part of the 90 experience.
That's right. This is why you shoot that many.
Right, exactly. I don't know why it should be a surprise, actually. I'm a little
but it was funny because when Sonny Burgo said when he couldn't believe his eyes either. He had to actually have somebody else look at it, and he had to have I think it was either Kirk or Ono. He had to have them look at it too and just say, yeah, that putter's bent. And I immediately got on my phone and texted you, and I said, see, it was the club's fault.
Exactly, like a true golfer. Well, since we're there, let's talk about that.
Yes,
so
okay.
the putter. First of all, I think a lot of people. I think more people now, because of the information out there, there's a lot of articles on it now and guys like us talking about it on the radio. But most people wouldn't think to go to get a putter fitting. But you pretty much had the same. My putter wasn't bent, but you pretty much had the same experience I did. So, you know, talk a little bit about that.
Well, the great thing about what they do there is it's not just, okay, go hit, then, you know, we'll see. And they're not even worried about, you know, fixing anything. They just want to look at your setup, and they want to see, you know, I took my old putter. They set up about an 8-foot putt with a target, and of course they set up the machine to sort of track the swing path and the scent, whether the ball was being hit towards the center of the club face, and just,
and even that has an angle of attack, basically.
Yes.
Down degree, up
absolutely.
Degree.
So once we got the whole issue with my bent putter fixed, because at first he noticed that I was pushing everything off. I'm a lefty, so I was pushing everything to the left, and he asked me if that was a general tendency, and I had to think about it for a second because I don't really necessarily pay attention. I said, well, okay, now that you mention it, yeah, I guess I do tend to push more than I do pull. And that's when he found out, okay, your putter's bent. And so he said, look, it was an Odyssey putter. And he says, well, we've got something just like that. He said, here, put this in your hand. The grip was a little thicker. And I actually like that because, you know, I try very hard when I do my putter swing is to make it a shoulder swing and not an arm swing.
Sure, of course.
And I like the idea.
Maintain the triangle.
Yes. And I like the idea of having a thicker handle because it takes the pressure off of the hand, because the hands are just there just to hold the club.
Right.
So if you're only there to hold the club and then you realize you have to generate the swing through the shoulders, then it felt a little bit more smooth and a little more natural. So at first when he said, well, it's a little thicker.
Was it the fat grip? Yeah.
It wasn't. I mean, it wasn't terribly fat, but it was fatter than what I had going in. And I hit about, I don't know, 6-7 putts, and they were all much closer to the target. Sonny was immediately is like, okay, well, we can definitely say it was the putter, because he kept saying, he says, look, I don't see anything wrong with your swing. He says, yeah, it's a little long and everything, but, you know, everybody's got their own putter tempo.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started to examine and look at, like you said, all the different metrics that went into the swing. We looked at the path of the swing. We looked at the contact. We looked at the angle of attack and everything like that.
Yeah, it's amazing how even the angle of attack, a lot of people drive the ball into the ground. They don't realize
Well, that's something that I never, you know, because, you know, when you're standing over a putt, I mean, you're not really looking at what the ball does when it comes off the club face. But what Sonny pointed out to me is he said, look, when you're going through the hitting zone, you're leading with your hands. Because I always felt like the hands should just be dead the whole time and just make the arm swing. So what was happening was that I guess I was having a little bit more of a forward shaft lean. So I was actually hitting down on the ball, which is something that I never noticed before when I did that. So,
sure.
And it was a great experience. And Sonny and I talked a little bit about drills. He told me about, you know, putting the tee pegs on either side of a putter head when you're on the green.
Mm-hmm.
But he also said something very interesting to me too about when I get on a practice green for the first time. He said the first thing you should do is just hit three putts and don't even look at where they're going. Just look down at the ball and just take three swings and then look up. If the balls are fairly close to each other, then you know you've got a pretty good rhythm going and you can work on other things like accuracy and things like that. But if the three balls are not even close to each other, well, then the first thing you have to fix is your rhythm, because obviously if you can't hit the ball with the proper amount of pace, then it doesn't really make a difference what direction you're hitting the putts. They're probably not going to go in anyway.
Sure.
Because, I mean, let's face it. I'm not making, you know, 25-footers. I might not even make 15-footers. The point is that if I'm on the green, I need to two putt. You got to stay away. I mean, look, we talked about it all the time about the short game and everything like that. You know, the short game is where you spend a lot of your strokes, and it's where your round can go from, you know, high 80s, it can go to high 90s.
Sure.
And so Sonny gave me a lot of interesting things to think about, because also, I mean, how many of us actually practice putting? Unless it's right before the round, and you're not even practicing. You're just warming up. You're not even spending a half hour, 45 minutes on the green just working on.
It's not real practice.
No, it's not real practice at all. So he gave me some very interesting things to think about when I go out onto a putting green to think about, okay, let me make sure that my path is right so I can put the tee pegs down. Let me make sure that I've got the right pace going, that I can at least know that if I'm a certain distance away that I have enough rhythm to figure out that I can hit the ball at that proper pace.
Sure.
And then I'm not leaving it 5 feet short or I'm not hitting it 5 feet past.
Yep, absolutely. I want to take one more break and then we'll come back. We'll wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit PetesGolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. My man, the man, the myth, the legend, Steve Goldman is in the studio today. We're just talking about your experience at Pete's Golf. And, you know, there's something that you had said at the beginning when you're talking about getting on the – you were working with Sonny Burgo and talking about getting fit for the for a putter and the things that you learned. But the interesting thing is that the process when you go get fit at Pete's Golf the process is the same, basically, no matter what you're going for. You know, basically, you start with your existing clubs, figure out what it is that you're, whatever it is that you've grooved,
yes.
Right? And I think that's the thing that people mistake when they get fitted for clubs, and that is, the thing is that they think they have to change, and that's really not, you know, of course you want to get better. Maybe you're going to go see a pro, but for the high handicapper or the mid-high handicapper, the weekend warrior, the guy that plays, you know, once a week or whatever the case may be, the thing is that you're better off going with whatever it is that you grooved and then let them fit to you the best things for you.
Absolutely, because what they really need is they need consistency.
Exactly.
When you stand in front of the simulator and you hit 7, 8, 9 shots, whatever it is, they need some sort of data to go with in order to make a decision about what the right club is.
Exactly.
So if you always fade the ball off the tee, or if you're always drawing the ball, or if you're a hook, if you're a slice, whatever it is, if it's repeatable, then they can work with you. The big problem is that if you're spraying the ball over the place, if you're playing army golf, you know, left, right, then, you know, club fitting is not going to be for you, because there's no way for them to be able to say, well, this club, now we can design it fit to your swing, well, because we don't know what your swing is.
Right.
So
right.
You really have to have an idea of what your swing is first. And like you said, yeah, do you want to improve it? You know, if you have an over the top move, obviously you want to fix it because you don't want to do that.
Right.
But in the meantime, why not get some equipment that conforms to your swing?
Right.
So at least, yes, you don't want to be over the top all the time, but at least you're not spending the next 10 minutes looking for your ball because it went 20 yards. It went 20 yards offline, or it went 30, 40 yards offline.
Right, and I would say even the most inconsistent, you know, players, I think even them, it might be just harder to find that data, but I think they probably, everybody has a tendency to do so, you know what
yeah.
I mean? So it just, you just have to drill down on that data maybe a little longer on for some than for others.
Yes, and one more thing I wanted to mention about the putter, which is different than the other clubs, is the great thing about the putter, or getting fitted for the putter, is as soon as Sonny put a putter in my hand and he says, well, how do you like it? And I said, well, it's great. I said, look, I'm closer online. He's like, okay, it's yours.
So right.
Unlike the other clubs that have to be manufactured and they have to be created and they have to be built, and it took about 10 days between the time that we finished the process until the clubs actually came. But I walked out of the store with the putter in hand. So that's the great thing about getting fitted for a putter, is that if they give you one that you like and that it conforms to your swing, then you can walk out of there with a brand new club.
It's the one part of the experience that you can get some instant gratification.
Absolutely.
You know? Maybe with a wedge, if you happen to, you know, if you can find something in the ballpark or whatever, and that can just needs to be bent or something. Maybe not for me, because we're lefties. So God knows we're waiting.
That's right.
But no, great stuff, Steve. Thank you again, and it was great to have you to do this. And obviously, we'll be back to more, because we didn't get to the driver,
yep.
And talk about that.
My pleasure.
And so, look forward to having you on again and on a more regular basis.
I look forward to the next time.
All right, that's On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Look forward to next week, folks. Enjoy the players, enjoy the beautiful weather, and make sure you see your local PGA professional.